Back together again, you and I, midweek Wednesday style, September 6th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We took a look at a few questions regarding media inquiries connected to an ongoing state police ticket investigation. Greenwich GOP State Senator Ryan Fazio joined us to chat about the latest controversy surrounding the ongoing State Peer Project. And finally, Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and editor Dan Haar dropped by for his weekly update. You know, one of the advantages I think personally that I have in doing this, and a lot of other talk show hosts, not including here in the state, but also around the U.S. and internationally, I think can claim this, because a lot of us segue from doing at one time what we call hard news, right? A reporter, an anchor, I'm here to get mayor. What's your reaction to that? Hold on, let me call my source back on that. So I think it helps a lot. It really does. If you segue to doing talk radio on any level, internationally, nationally, locally, like here in Connecticut, it helps if you have a journalism background. If at one time you were a reporter, and if for two reasons, it allows me to get in the head of a reporter to what he or she is thinking. And it also allows me, now that I've segued here at WICC into doing this, I think it allows me to, present to you some of the things that I find good about some cases involving reporters and information. And frankly, sometimes not so good, and wondering out loud what we should be thinking about. I was going to get to this story yesterday, but good Lord, we got so busy. So we'll do this today. And this is a story that I've followed on this program. Melissa has in the morning, Lisa has in the middays. This is this ongoing controversy now, which has now been handed off to some federal officials regarding falsified traffic records by the state police. Now, let's say something right out up front here to get us going. This is not about falsified tickets. And it's sad because I hear some people still saying that. No, this is falsified traffic records, meaning that there is a supposition here, and there will likely be instances, as we've talked about this, where some members of the Connecticut State Police Force, the men and the women there, either patrol officers or dispatchers or support crews, for some reason, we've been told by this group that watches for racial disparities that these numbers don't add up. In other words, there are doubts as to whether the actual number of vehicle stops and tickets written actually synchronizes or syncs up with the data in the computer. Now, we've heard a lot of finger pointing on this already. Oh, it's racist. Oh, it's not racist. Oh, it must be racist. Stop saying it's racist. We heard from the former president of the union last week or a couple of weeks ago. I played that lengthy audio of Andy Matthews saying, hey, this could be just as simple as a misunderstanding of who was entering information. But nonetheless, there are allegations from the Connecticut Racial Profiling Prohibition Project that there was a high likelihood. Now, notice that's not a definite yes. There is a high likelihood that some, not all, some state troopers had falsified reporting. Now, falsified reporting, what does the word falsified mean? We don't know. Does that mean bad data? Mainly, why was it done? Again, we still don't know. Over a stretch of years, from 25,966 instances. Now, this, as you obviously know, has become, pardon me, extremely contentious here, to the point where there is now a judge, a Superior Court judge, trying to decide whether or not the names and the badge numbers of 130 troopers who are currently being investigated here be released. The judge is weighing a request from the Connecticut State Police Union to prevent the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. That's the state police under the Commissioner Rovella there, the state public safety commissioner, from going ahead and having to comply with a Freedom of Information Act request from the Connecticut mayor, the names and badge numbers of 130 troopers. Now, this is where I get a little antsy here, and this is where I think I can balance what I do here versus what I used to do when I was a reporter and out actually covering stories, talking to both sides and having to, you know, write copy and voice stories to give you an unbiased, not leaning left, not leaning right perspective, but an unbiased issue on this. Now, the State Police Union, the reps for the union have said, according to this story here in the Connecticut Mirror, that, I'm sorry, this is in the News Junkie. I'm sorry, the Connecticut News Junkie. That 27 of the 130 troopers under review have already been exonerated from any wrongdoing. Now, that's what the union says. The union also says the falsified ticket scandal has already resulted in at least one threat against the lives of state police troopers. So, again, I understand why these media outlets, the Connecticut Mirror and some others, want these names. Here's my question. It's a simple question to start off, or my position here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And this is where now I'm going to segue here from being the bold reporter, you know, with the trench coat on and the pork pie hat with the press card in it. Hi, I'm from the news. What can you tell me about this? Huh? What's the reason for needing these names now? Honestly. In the racially charged atmosphere that we have, why release those names now? When, again, this is still being investigated. And again, I know what you may say. Well, you know, when people are arrested and charged, and I agree with that. There's no resolution to this yet. There is no need, I think, and this is why I'm going to go after some of my brethren here in the journalistic field. To me, this just reeks of, hey, we demand this for no good reason. I mean, if you get if the Connecticut Mirror, if the News Junkie, if Hearst, if anybody got these names, what's the purpose? Unless these people have been, these troopers and their badge numbers are issued, and the state police have said, hey, we're suspending these troopers or whatever, and they face criminal prosecution. Now, if they face criminal prosecution, well, then fine. Of course you release those names and badge numbers. But my initial thought here is, what's the point? And again, the reason I started out saying I can kind of understand this, yeah, I kind of get it, right? Because I'm sure the people at the Connecticut Mirror, the Connecticut News Junkie at Hearst, The Day, all these journalistic organizations around the state, all of whom I deeply respect. I mean, they're good people. I know a lot of people that work there. But again, it's not just about having the right to the information, but what do you do with it? Why would you want, for example, the names of these troopers now, when nothing has been settled? This is still in the investigatory realm of this. Is this, and I hate to say it, is this a scenario of, well, we have to have these names? And I understand what some people are going to say. And if you want to say that to me, fine. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. If you want to say that to me, fine, but you know, I'm not in no way going to buy this whole thing of, well, we're the media and we have the right to know. Well, I'm the media, too. When I was a reporter for a 10, 15 year stretch, And did I feel I had the right to know everything? Well, no, I didn't. And my fear is, you know, if somebody said, well, Paul, maybe they should give the numbers of these 130 troopers to the, to these publications like the Mirror and the News Junkie and Hearst and all these other people, you know, around the state, on the grounds they have to keep them private. That's never going to happen. Trust me, I've been doing this for too long. I know people in this business for too long, and there's going to be someone who would leak those names. So agree, disagree, what do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Should the state police be compelled to, follow the state FOI laws right now and release the names of these troopers? Now, apparently, there are 130 troopers being looked at, and again, they didn't give out false tickets. This wasn't like, oh, there's a black guy, there's a Hispanic guy, there's a Puerto Rican guy, there's an Asian Pacific Islander guy or gal. I'm going to give them a ticket because of their skin color. That, at least in this point in the investigation, that is not part of the investigation. It's not. There's been no conclusions there. This is strictly being judged on numbers alone by the Connecticut Racial Profiling Prohibition Project. So should the state police be compelled to turn over the names and badge numbers of these 130 troopers when, according to the union, at least 27 of them have already been exonerated? I say no. I say unless there are solid, irrefutable criminal charges, that's a big no for me. Okay, back to open phones a little bit later on in this hour. How are you? 2 hours down, two to go. When we get back to those open phones, it will be, of course, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I have talked about the State Pier Project out in New London. And the reason I say out in New London is, let's face it, now the eastern part of the state is a wonderful part of the state. I know people think of the casinos, but there are hundreds of thousands of people that live out there. I've got radio friends out there. The fine folks at Electric Boat are there. There are some wonderful places to go and eat and to stay. But to a lot of people in Fairfield and New Haven County, out there is kind of out there. But I've been keeping you up to date on a project that's called the State Pier. And it's been this huge project to modernize the state pier with the notion that it would be a launching point for and an intake point for stuff that would need to be schlepped back and forth between these giant wind turbines. And now wind energy is a big thing. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people say it kills birds, whatever. This project started out supposedly going to cost $93 million, which in today's money, that gets you a number one starting pitcher for about 3 or 4 years. And now the project is said to be tickling $300 million, which is still not the Mets payroll, but I digress. But now we get word, and I said it was the day of New London. It's actually Bloomberg here, that I guess one of the partners in the State Pier Project that is using some of your money and my tax money is threatening to walk away from this now as this pier project continues to be kind of awash in all this finger-pointing about costs and everything. And to join us right now and to talk about Orsted here and what is going on that pier so far away, Greenwich GOP State Senator Ryan Fazio. Hey, Ryan, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. So somebody sent me this, Ryan, and I thought this might be a good thing for you and I to chat about. Tell us about Orsted, O-R-S-T-E-D, and what involvement they have in this State Pier project, Ryan.
Yes, yeah, so Orsted is a major a Danish developer of wind energy and is, I think, the largest developer of wind energy in the world. And they are the major stakeholder for the wind development projects, the offshore wind projects that are going up all across the northeastern United States. A lot of these projects have been contracted in by state governments, including one in Connecticut where Orsted and Eversource did a joint venture to develop 800 megawatts of electricity to come to Connecticut. They did so at very generous rates that ratepayers, that we as consumers are going to have to pay around 10 cents per kilowatt hour. Compare that to the normal market where electricity is generated at 3 or 4 cents per kilowatt hour. But on top of that, in order to build out the infrastructure to service and build the project, we also had to build a state pier, which was promised to us at around $90 or $100 million by the leadership of the state government a few years ago, but now has a price tag that has ballooned to about $300 million. On top of that, Orsted has come out in recent weeks, and I've kind of known this was coming, and said that they might have to pull out of all northeastern offshore wind development totally, because even the cost that they contracted to sell their electricity to us at, mm-hmm. which is about three times the normal market rate, that's not enough to meet the cost inflation that they're facing. So we might be on the hook for so they're going back and trying to renegotiate these contracts with state governments like us. We might be on the hook for electricity that is 3, 4, 5 times more expensive than the electricity we're currently generating and paying for, on top of the fact that we have to, as taxpayers, pay for a $300 million or most of a $300 million state pier project in order to service that. And that doesn't even get into all of the transmission lines that we're going to have to pay for, and the infrastructure upgrades, the electricity grid, the transformers, and the substations that we're going to have to pay for in order to build out this offshore wind development. This is, you think your electricity is high in this state now. You think your taxes are high in this state now. I have bad news for you. It's getting worse, and it's because of bad decision-making that almost anyone should have been able to see from a mile away.
So, Ryan, and again, I'm no expert in this, and you're a state lawmaker, and you've got a good financial background as well. Is there any indication, Ryan, that there were safeguards built into this deal about companies pulling out, about requests for more funding, about, you know, about SOSs being sent saying, hey, this is not going to work out for us? Do we have any idea if the state has any redress here or not?
Well, the ultimate recourse, barring fraud, is that there is an option to cancel the contracts from the developers, and they have to pay the state. It depends on the contract, the power purchase agreement that was signed by the developer and the state of Connecticut through the utilities. But they would probably have to pay a $10, $20, $30 million penalty mm-hmm. for breaking the contract. Ultimately, that is a drop in the bucket for us as a state. When we built out a $300 million, and we are building it out, a $300 million state pier, and we're also counting on generating electricity from this. It might not be a bad outcome, given how expensive this electricity is going to be. And if the alternative is that they're going to have to renegotiate the rates from 10 cents per kilowatt hour, again, that's about three times as expensive as the market price for electricity. Mm-hmm. Mostly natural gas is the source of electricity in northeastern U.S.
Sure.
They might renegotiate and need 15 cents per kilowatt hour in order to make this work for them economically. If that's the case, I don't see how we can justify as a state quintupling the price of generating electricity on the backs of middle-class, working-class consumers, people, retirees on fixed income. It might be that some costs have sunk, and, mm-hmm. and we can't go forward with something at 15 cents. So we're going to see, but this is a very bad situation, and your electricity bills, the electricity grid in 10, 20 years is on very weak footing.
Wow. And Ryan, in about the minute or so we have left, is there any consternation among you folks in the state house or state senator at the Capitol that, as we've discussed here, this project was originally, you know, proposed at $90 million, and we know how these things go. There's built in, you know, there's anticipation of cost overruns here, but $93 million to now around $300 million with the crews, the developers saying, well, hey, we ran into some stuff that we weren't anticipating in drilling and putting the foundations in. I mean, what's your reaction to that?
I mean, when I see the Twitter accounts, the social media accounts, the statements that are often show indignation and get worked up from the people who actually control the levers of government in Connecticut, who are in the majority, when I see what they get upset about and how upset they get about it, I'm always surprised that issues like this, where they actually have responsibility, where they actually have input, where the cost of building something has gone from $90 million on the backs of taxpayers to $300 million on the backs of taxpayers, but they don't show much attention, they don't show much indignation of all the waste, of all the ineptitude in our state government and the counterparties that are involved. I mean, this is almost criminal. I mean, there could be actual crimes committed in this scandal, but it's totally scandalous. And the people who are in leadership in this state should be held accountable if they're not going to actually do something about it, if they're not actually as angry as I think taxpayers and ratepayers should be about.
Ryan Fazio. Ryan, good to hear from you. Take care, and we'll talk down the road.
Thanks,
Ryan,
Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate it, my friend. Thanks. There you go. Ryan Fazio, State Senate Republican from Greenwich, Lower Fairfield County, about a project called the State Pier that was supposed to cost $93 million. It's up around $300 million now, and one of the main backers, a company called Orsted, says, you know, maybe we just may pull out of this whole thing. Oh, man, there is a lot going on in the Constitution State, the Nutmeg State. Which one is proper? I'm not sure. Is it a mood thing? Anywhere here in Connecticut every Wednesday about this time or so. First up in the 5 o'clock hour, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, joins us to sort all this stuff out. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. Everything good here. It's hot in the summertime.
Yeah. Oh, you're breaking into song. Dan, you're breaking into song on me here. I like this.
Wow. Yeah. My daughter is a singer.
Really?
I didn't inherit that from her, so
okay.
I'll have to leave that to her.
I mean, so was my son. He's actually a classically trained a singer, a tenor, but yeah, that's where the genes went, not me.
There you go.
Chris Murphy, who was the subject of one of your compatriots' editorials the other day, now is supporting Mitch McConnell. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, you know, supporting meaning that he's not ganging up on the Senate Majority Leader, who has had two in recent months, one just last week, episodes that look like seizures, but which, of course, I, not being a doctor, the Capitol doctor said they were not seizures, mm-hmm. and that were not a stroke or a mini stroke or what have you. It could be anything, obviously. Neurological issues come, and nobody wishes ill on even their political opponents. And Chris Murphy reinforced that credo by saying that he does not believe that Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell, is unfit to lead his caucus. He, of course, presaged that remark by saying he agrees with almost nothing McConnell does or says. But that's par for the course. The point is that we are not seeing, and I think Chris Murphy is Senator Murphy is a sort of not out of line with the rest of Democrats. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing a hue and cry for McConnell. Some in the nation we're seeing it, but in the Senate, once again, the world's most exclusive deliberative body closes ranks across party lines.
Yeah, and let me ask you this regarding that, Dan. You've been around long enough to have a good gauge on this. Whether Chris Murphy, you know, he seems to march to his own drum or drummers. He takes flack from the left. He takes flack from the right. Yet he doesn't seem bothered by any of this. What do you think is in store for him in the coming years?
I think he sees himself as as one of the younger senators and as one of the most digital digitally facile senators online, he sees himself as more in touch with the culture than many of his colleagues, and certainly the elderly colleagues. We won't name names. And as such, he's willing and able to make comments about things like the young singer who hit the top of the charts with the song about rich men north of Richmond. And as you exactly just said, for example, my colleague Hugh Bailey wrote a column in Hearst Media Publications. Mm-hmm. He's on the editorial board. He wrote a signed column, which was excellent, in which he said that somebody should run against Chris Murphy because he has to be called out. He believes, Hugh Bailey believes, that Chris Murphy is out of touch, just now discovering that there are these MAGA Republicans who are disenfranchised white middle class, not white working class people who feel left out. And he feels that, quite to the contrary of Chris Murphy seeing himself as a visionary of culture, that he's behind the times. We hashed over those issues in 2016 after the Trump election, Hugh Bailey wrote. So you're getting, and he, by the way, agrees with most, if not all, of the left leaning policy choices that Chris Murphy supports or brings forward. So that's exactly what you were just saying.
You always, Dan, keep an eye on all the rate requests, all the myriad of utility issues we have in this state. What's the latest with another rate case here?
Yeah, why do I do that? Let's see.
because, Dan, somebody has to. That's right.
Somebody does. Coming on the heels of both the Aquarion Water Company and the United Illuminating Electric Distribution rate requests being shot down heavily by the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority this year, the Connecticut Water Company, which is the second largest commercial water company, they have about 110,000 customers, and they're in 60 towns.
Yeah.
So they're in a lot of places. They've got an 18% rate hike, and they are saying, we are not afraid of this new performance-based rate-making method. We're good with it. You go ahead, Pura, rate us according to the way you want performance rate-making to work, and we're good because we take the measure of our customers, and we take the measure of our employees, and we take the measure of the rest of our stakeholders, our communities, and we're going to meet those standards. And we need an 18% rate hike. So that battle is bound to be very interesting because, contrary to UI and Aquarion, Connecticut Water is not taking a combative approach to this. They're saying we're good, we're cooperative, but we need the money.
The mayoral races, Dan, of course, we have what Bridgeport does every 4 years, an interesting race here, the race in New Haven that was a forum last night, but the race in Hartford to replace Luke Bronin, mayor of the city's capital, who is stepping aside for reasons personal, is getting, you say, a little nasty. What's going on there?
It is. Just to set the race in Hartford apart from the races in Bridgeport and New Haven. Bridgeport and New Haven both have incumbent mayors who are electorally strong. There's no immediate reason to believe either Joe Ganim or Justin Ellica will be defeated by their opponents. Their opponents are fine and they're good and they may defeat them, but there's no immediate reason. Hartford is the free-for-all.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, Mayor Luke Bronin is not running for re-election. We suspect he may want to run for governor and set himself up for that and not be busy, or maybe he won't do that. But he certainly had two terms as Hartford mayor. And just today, one of the three nominated, or rather, one of the three Democratic candidates in the primary next Tuesday, former senator, former judge Eric Coleman, had a press conference, really strangely, with a city council member, Nick LeBron, who it was billed was going to support and endorse Eric Coleman, but the endorsement didn't happen. Instead, they stood behind a podium with each one having a sign for mayor, because Nick LeBron is a petitioning candidate, in which they attacked Arunan Aralampalam, who is the endorsed candidate, for taking contributions from people out of town with a fundraiser in Torrington, many Republicans. This is going back and forth, and I found it outrageous. Meanwhile, both Coleman and John Fanfara and Errol Upham, the three, have all taken contributions from out of town, because guess where there is money if you're running for Hartford? Not in Hartford.
Out of town.
out of town. And so the question is pick the name of the candidate of your choice beholden to out-of-town interests? Well, guess what? 50% of the Hartford city budget is paid for by state taxpayers. Mm. So I think we should give every person in the state of Connecticut half a vote in Hartford. But in any case,
imagine that.
In any case, I want to talk about an outrage if you have 30
more
seconds.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
One of the supporters of either LeBron or Coleman, Councilman LeBron or Judge Coleman, got up to the podium and said, and I am not making this up, I have watched the tape. She said, "I cannot pronounce his name. I wouldn't vote for him." Now, if this doesn't have racist overtones, I don't know what does. It's also a reminder of the Republicans who made sure to pronounce the name of the 42nd or 3rd, 44th President Barack Hussein Obama. Right? His name is Arunan Arulopalam. It's not that hard to pronounce.
Dan, and you took pride in this because you did it. I've actually practiced to myself saying that name, so I can almost say it. Yes, I practiced I've got to say it. Absolutely.
Well, I want to. We have a debate tomorrow, which I want to shamelessly plug. It is at 7 p.m., jointly sponsored by Hearst CT Insider and WFSB Channel 3. It is in the studios of FSB Channel 3, 7 to 8 p.m., live on their channel, as well as streaming on multiple outlets, including both of our websites. And I am a panelist, and I intend to say Mr. Arulopalam. And I'm not going to screw it up. Now, do you think I'm going to screw it up, Paul?
No. You're cool, you're calm, you're collected, Dan. Everything will be fine. About 2 minutes we have left here in this segment. Dan, I said earlier today on the show, I think because the national polls, Trump-Biden, if in fact we get that, which I don't think we will on either side, but the polls aren't moving, Dan. There are no outliers here. This, at least now, is a statistical dead heat if you don't parse all the other states individually. Is this why we're starting to see, now we're getting the rumbling here in Connecticut of, hey, you can't have Trump on the ballot?
Among the 600,000 political stories that I've read on this cycle, one person, I think it might have been The Atlantic, don't hold me to that, it was an opinion piece that said, the first party that has the guts to step up and dump one of these guys wins. Mm. Because the Democrats should dump Biden. Love the guy. I think he's one of the best presidents of the last 100 years. Not kidding. Love the guy. He's a liability because of the issues that are not his fault. Trump, I don't even want to talk about. The first party that dumps one of these two guys wins. Trump, of course, is the subject of the indictments, the most serious being the sedition, and that is in the 14th Amendment. Mm-hmm. And therefore, one of the councilmen, aldermen from New Haven, has written a letter to Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas saying, keep him off the ballot. She remains undecided. But that's going to be an issue across the country.
All right. Listen, Dan, great to talk with you. Tomorrow, look into the camera and wave at me, okay? And I'll make sure you're okay. All right. Dan Hart. Dan, enjoy the debate tomorrow night, and we'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
Great. I'll see you then.
All right. Dan Haar right there. Hearst Connecticut Media. Always interesting. Covers a lot of stuff. And he's one of the best guys on that whole on those rate increase stories. So there you go.